Good evening or afternoon. Good to see you out. Glad to have you here with us tonight. Most of you who are regular members here know that the curriculum we use for our high school and younger classes are based on an outline found in a series of books written by Bob and Sandra Waldron. We began using this particular curriculum when Bob was preaching here. Bob used to review that narrative with the entire group from time to time when he was here. But Bob's been gone about 15 years now. So I don't know if it's been done many times since then or not. But the elders have asked that tonight we take time to look at the narrative beginning in Genesis and working our way all the way through toward the time of the epistles. This is normally the first class that I do when I teach the Genesis and the Foundations class. So some of you will have seen this same set of slides from having been in that class. We talk about the 17 periods of Bible history. And then we need to say first, there's nothing magic about the number 17. It could have been 15 or 8 or 20. It just so happens that Bob and Sandra chose 17 when they broke it up. And so we have the 17 periods of Bible history. And all this does is provides a skeleton on which we can hang the various events and the people that fit into the narrative. Pegs, I've heard Bob call it, to hang things on. I like to refer to it as buckets. Each person, each event fits somewhere in one of those buckets, one or more of those buckets, as we look at the history and the narrative. I used to play a game sometime when I was teaching a high school class. At the end of the class, I had a little time where I would call out an event or a person and have them tell me what period that fits into. You might say Jonathan and let them tell you the period or the crossing of the Red Sea. And it got to be fun when you did things like Saul or Joseph. And they would sit there and say, which one? Because it's one in the Old Testament, one in the New Testament. Steve says they teach this at one of the camps he's involved with. And after going through it, they have the guys get up. And at first he said 2 minutes. That sounds like fast. But let's say 5 minutes. And have the guys tell as much detail and cover the entire narrative in that short period of time to see what they know about it. So we'll include some events tonight as we go through it. Not enough to get in detail, but enough to make the thread kind of tie through the narrative as we go. So I normally cover this in a 40-minute class period. I'll try not to go too far over tonight, maybe none. If I do, bear with me. I've interspersed some maps into the narrative to kind of make it, hopefully, where you can follow the flow. They move around from different Bible lands as we go through it. So we'll look tonight at the periods of Bible history. And the first one, Bob and Sandra call the period before the flood. You might choose another name for it, but it is that part of the Bible that covers the time up to the flood. And it takes up the first 5 chapters of the book of Genesis. Chapter 1 being the creation, when God said, let there be, and there were the various things that were created all the different days of creation. Chapter 2 is Adam and Eve in the garden and the time they spent there. And this is an approximate place that most scholars feel maybe the Garden of Eden was located based on the names of some of the rivers. So we'll look at some of the maps as we go through tonight. Chapter 3 is, we know, for the first sin was committed with Eve and Adam as they ate the fruit they were forbidden to. And Genesis 3:15 brings us that first promise of the seed that would come later on. So that's a very important chapter for us from that standpoint. Chapter 4 tells us the story of Cain and Abel. And then chapter 5 lists out generations that go from the time of Adam up to the time of Noah. So then period number 2 is the period of the flood. Again, roughly 5 chapters in Genesis covering this part. So in chapter 6, the whole earth had become wicked, and God wished he had not made man. And he picked out righteous Noah, told him to build the ark. And then chapter 7, after Noah's got everything ready, the rains come and the flood begins. After everything was covered, everything had died except what Adam, what Noah had in the ark with him, then the waters began to recede in chapter 8. Then in chapter, the map here, the ark lands on the mountains of Ararat, maybe perhaps in this area here. And in chapter 9, there are several things introduced here that are new. Meat was given for food. We don't have any record of them eating meat before, seems this. Capital punishment. The law of capital punishment was set up by God, life for life, blood for blood. The promise of the rainbow, where God said he would never destroy the earth again by water. And then Noah, of course, planted the vineyard and drank the wine and got drunk, and the shameful sins that's involved with that. Third period, the scattering of the people, is a very short time frame period. It only covers one chapter, chapter 11 in the book of Genesis. And it's on the plains of Shinar. Probably Shinar around here, because if you look at Daniel chapter 1, I think it's verse 2, that says Daniel was carried to the land of Shinar, which he was carried to Babylon. So this would be the place for that. People wanted to build a tower that reached to heaven, to make a name for themselves, where they wouldn't be scattered. That was not God's intent. He wanted them to scatter out, to replenish and refill the earth. So he came down and confused their languages, where they would move out and fulfill his purpose there. So the scattering of the people. So before the flood, the scattering of the people. The remainder of the book of Genesis, 12 through 50, is covered with the period of the patriarchs. Patriarchs just simply means father rule. And the three that we know most about, of course, would be Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Jacob's name changed to Israel. Genesis 12, verses 1 through 3 and verse 7, we have the three promises made to Abraham, that he would make Abraham a great nation, he would give him the land where he was, and the seed promise, through him all the nations of the earth would be blessed. This is confirmed to us in Acts chapter 3, when it specifically ties Abraham that promise to Jesus. Israel's name, Jacob's name changed to Israel. He had 12 sons, the 12 tribes of Israel. And one of those sons was Joseph. Joseph wasn't liked by his other brothers. They were jealous over him because he was his father's favorite. So they sold him. And he wound up in the land of Egypt. And through the blessings of God and his righteousness, he was promoted to second in the kingdom in Egypt. For a purpose. A famine came to the land. There was no food. And Joseph sent for his father and all the family to move down into Egypt. About 70 of them came into Egypt there with Joseph. So we have the period of the patriarchs with Joseph and the family moved into Egypt. So this land, the way Abraham moved from Ur up the Euphrates River to Haran and back down, some of the cities then Israel that we think about, or Shechem, Bethel, Beersheba, Abraham down into Egypt and then back into the land that God would promise him to his descendants. Period 5 covers the period of the Exodus, the leaving of Egypt. 400 years have passed since that 70 people went into Egypt. And now a Pharaoh's come up that didn't know Joseph and didn't know about these people. And they've become a large nation by now. And Pharaoh made slaves out of them to make bricks. Genesis chapter 46, verse 3, God speaking to Jacob about going down into Egypt. Now go with Joseph. He said, I am God, the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt, for I will make you a great nation there. They become a great nation now in the land of Egypt. God raised up Moses to deliver them out of Egypt, out of that slavery that they had been in. Remember that with the the plagues, the 10 plagues that were sent to soften Pharaoh's heart to get him to let the people leave Egypt. The 10th plague, of course, being the death of the firstborn and the blood on the mantle, that lintels that would keep the death angel from striking the children of Israel. They leave, they cross the Red Sea, and they journey down to Mount Sinai. They're hungry. God feeds them with manna. They have nothing in the wilderness there to eat. God provides water for them there. So they left from the land of Goshen in Egypt, and they traveled down to Mount Sinai, where they're camped. At this point, they're given four things that make them a complete nation. They're given a covenant. God makes a covenant with them. I'll be your God if you'll be my people. He sets up the law from Moses. Sets up the priesthood and the tabernacle, a place he would dwell among the people, and a way for the priest to worship and have the people worship him. So now they are a nation. One of those first promises to Abraham is now fulfilled. After a period of time there, when all this was completed, they moved from Mount Sinai up to Kadesh Barnea, where the 12 spies were sent out to look at the land of Canaan before they went in. So they left Sinai here and went up to Kadesh Barnea on the southern side, the southern end of the land of Canaan. They sent the spies out. As you know, 10 of them came back and said, "We cannot take the land. They're giants." 2 came back and said, "We could," Joshua and Caleb. But the 10 convinced the people they could not do it. So God sentenced them to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. Numbers chapter 14. Several events that occurred during that time, we can list a lot more, but the story of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, as they rebelled against Moses and Aaron and their authority given them from God. In Numbers chapter 20, several things happened. Miriam, who was Moses and Aaron's sister, died. Moses committed sin that would keep him from going into the land. When God had told him to speak to the rock, he struck the rock. It was me, we bring forth water to you from this rock, as he says to the people there. Aaron, who was the first high priest and Moses' brother, dies in chapter 20 also. Chapter 21, we have an event that we need to know about because it ties to the New Testament. When they were being bitten into the plague from the serpents, Moses put this bronze serpent upon the pole. Jesus referenced that in John chapter 3. That he would be raised up just as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness. 22, the story of Balaam and Balak. 26, getting toward the end of the time, they take another census. In this census, they found out that all of the men above age 20 from when they started wandering have now died, except for Joshua and Caleb. It's time for Moses to die because he will not go into the land. So Joshua is appointed in Numbers 27 to take Moses' place to lead the people into the land of promise. And in Deuteronomy 34, Moses goes up and gets to look into the land, see it, but not enter it. And he dies there. So now the people are camped on the east side of Jordan, on the plains of Moab, ready to go in and take the land that God has promised to them. So we have the period 7, called the invasion and conquest, as they go in and capture the land that was promised to them. Joshua covers this. Joshua's now the leader. Joshua chapter 3, they cross the Jordan River. In chapter 5, they restart circumcision, and the manna they've been fed with stops. Chapter 6, they march around the city of Jericho, and the walls fall down, and they capture Jericho, their first city they had captured there. This is a special city. God said, "The city is mine, therefore take nothing from it, from the spoils." Unfortunately, one of them did. So now they go up in chapter 7 and get a little small village of Ai, and they are defeated, and they can't understand why. It's because of sin in the camp. They deal with that sin. They go back in chapter 8, and they take Ai. Chapter 9, they make an unwise covenant with the Gibeonites that'll come back to bite them later on. So the conquest went something like this. The central part of the land they take, the southern part, and then the northern part. So central and southern, and then the northern as they conquer the land. In Joshua chapter 13, verse 7, they divide the land they've now conquered between the various tribes and give them their allotments. One thing to keep in mind, God had told them to go in and drive everybody out. Take the land totally. They did not do that. And they will suffer for it for years to come. Joshua 21 says, verse 43, so the Lord gave to Israel all the land which he had sworn to their fathers, and they took possession of it and dwelt in it. So now the promise made to Abraham, repeated to Isaac, repeated to Jacob, has been finished. The land is now belonging to their descendants. Joshua 24, Joshua dies, and they have no ruler, no leader now, but God's going to do it differently. They've already conquered the land. So now we have the period of the judges, where God raises up a judge as needed to lead the people. 15 judges, if you count Abimelech. And I use four R's to represent the cycle that's repeated throughout the book of Judges. Rebellion, people rebel against God. Sin, repression, you might like the word oppression better, but repression works. And then as the enemy came in and conquered them, and then repentance on the part of the people, and then God raises up the judge to rescue them. That cycle is repeated over and over through the book of Judges. Several of the judges, a couple of them we could mention here. Gideon is known because he started out with a large army, and God reduced it down to only 300 people when he got to go 300 men when he went to battle. Jephthah made a very unwise vow with his daughter. You remember that? Eli and his wicked sons, and Samuel, prophet, priest, judge, the last of the judges. It was during Samuel's time in 1 Samuel chapter 8, when the people said, we want to be like the nations round about us. We want a king to go out and lead us into battle. Samuel was hurt. God was hurt. But God said, give it to him. So instead of being group of the judges led by God, they'll have a king. The spirit of judges lasted about 350 years. So now we have period 9, which is the United Kingdom. United because later on there will be a divided kingdom. We'll get to it in just a minute. The United Kingdom. Three kings in this time frame, Saul, David, and Solomon. And these dates are approximate, but they're nice and easy to remember. About 1040 to 1000 BC, the time of Saul as king, the first king that appointed over the people. Better known, well known, I guess, for what happened to him in 1 Samuel chapter 15, when God sent him up against the Amalekites and said, go and utterly destroy them. And he did not. He brought back the king and some of the animals to offer sacrifices, tried to blame it on the people and all this when Samuel confronted him. And because of this, God said he would take the kingdom away from Saul. So Saul went about 1040 to 1000 BC. Then David, shepherd boy David, was anointed to be the next king of Israel. A lot of conflict between Saul and David during the time from he was anointed until time that he actually became king. But David ruled about 1000 to 960 BC. Each one about 40 years here. David wanted to build, after he got his house of cedar built, he wanted to build a house for God, build a temple. And God said, no, you're a man of war and you will not do that. But David spent a lot of time designing and preparing all the material to build the temple, which his son Solomon will do next. 2 Samuel 7, very important chapter. In the time of David, it's the point at which God promises David, I will raise up for you a king to sit on your throne who will rule forever. speaking of Christ, or course of Christ. And then the third king is Solomon, David's son, and all the rest of the kings in the south will be descendants of David. David's son Solomon, about 960 to 920 B.C. He began the temple about 4 years after he took the kingdom. Known for his wisdom that God gave him, for tremendous wealth, and also for the large number of wives he had. And unfortunately, it's this last part that got him into trouble, because he got to following the idols of all these wives, who led him away from God. So God said, I'll take 10 of the tribes away from you. I'll leave just enough to keep my promise to your father David. So that means, you know, Saul, David, Solomon, three kings of the United Kingdom. So, with God splitting the 10 tribes out from Solomon, we have the divided kingdom, divided about a boundary just north of the top of the Dead Sea, between Israel in the north and Judah in the south. This lasted about 200 years, about 920 to about 721 B.C. Israel's in the north. Jeroboam's their first king. There are 10 tribes there. Jeroboam did not want the people to go back to Jerusalem to the temple to worship. So he built the calves, one at Dan and one at Bethel. There were no good kings in Israel. None that followed God. None. The nation of Israel, the northern kingdom, fell to Assyrian captivity in 721 B.C. Gone forever, never to be reassembled as a nation again. Judah's in the south. Two tribes, really most of them have soared now into the one tribe of Judah. Rehoboam, son of Solomon, descendant of David, is on the throne in the south. Keep in mind, 2 Samuel chapter 7, there's always going to be a descendant of David on the throne as long as there are kings in Judah. Some of the kings we can mention, Hezekiah was a good king. Hezekiah was actually the king in Judah when Israel fell in the north in 721 B.C. With Israel gone, leaves Judah alone, period number 11. So now Judah's the only nation left that we have to deal with as far as the people of God. This lasted about 135 years from 721 to 586 B.C. Manasseh, one of the well-known kings of this period, 55 years he ruled, extremely evil. In fact, probably the ultimate downfall of the nation because of Manasseh. But that doesn't mean that everybody that came after him was bad, because Josiah ruled after him, was 31 years of a good king. So the choice was there. Finally, Jerusalem fell because of the wickedness there and the idolatry in the south. Jerusalem fell to Babylon, King Nebuchadnezzar, in 586 B.C. And now the nation of Judah has gone into captivity. However, unlike the northern kingdom of Israel, Judah will return. God promises that to them. Taken into Babylonian captivity, the big Babylonian empire, the main empire of the country, of the world, known world at that time. So we have the period number 12, the period of the captivity. We have some dates now that may get a little confusing, because they're going to overlap some. The captivity, even though it said Jerusalem fell in 586, you got to back up. 606 B.C. is when the captivity actually started. This is when the first group was taken captive. So there's some overlap in the time frame here. So in 606, 605, the first group of captives is taken from Jerusalem into Babylon. This would include Daniel. His friends was one of the ones taken in this first group. So remember Daniel and the image of Daniel chapter 2. We'll touch on that some more just in a minute. So Daniel and his first group of captives taken. In 597, another group taken captive from Jerusalem into Babylon. And this would include Ezekiel and this group. So Daniel's gone, Ezekiel's gone. And then in 586, the ultimate fall of the city of Jerusalem. 2 Kings 25, verse 21, that's when the actual fell. Then the king of Babylon struck them, put them to death at Riblah, in the land of the Hanath, and Judah was carried away captive from its land. Unlike Israel and the north, Judah actually got to return to their home. There are three prophets that are key during this time frame. Daniel was taken with the first group. Mentioned that already. I like to remember Daniel with all the D's. Daniel interpreted the dreams of Nebuchadnezzar. He would not eat the king's delicacies, or some translations say the king's dainties. Also remembered Darius as one of the kings. And of course, Daniel in the den of lions in Daniel chapter 6. Taking a group with that first group in 606. So the D's of Daniel. Another prophet during this time, major prophet, was Ezekiel. Ezekiel is also taken captive. He's in exile. He is out with the everyday people, where Daniel's in the king's palace area in Babylon. Ezekiel is out with the everyday people. He's trying to explain to them why. Why is this all happening? And he's also telling them what's going on, explaining what's happening back in the city of Jerusalem. Jerusalem hadn't fallen yet when Ezekiel's taken. He's trying to explain what's happening back in Jerusalem. He also prophesies about Egypt and about Edom, taken captive in the second group in 597. Then the third prophet of this time frame is Jeremiah. Jeremiah is still back in Judah. He does not go to captivity. He has a choice. He refuses that and stays there with the people who are left, the poor and those who are left in the land. So he's in Judah, the city of Jerusalem. Before they fall, he tells them, justice is coming. You got to repent. It's coming. It's coming. And then after that, he's trying to get the people still to turn back to God. He started prophesying about 626 for about 40 years. So the three main prophets of that: Daniel, king's palace; Ezekiel, with the people, everyday people out in captivity; and Jeremiah, back in Jerusalem. Thinking back to the statue, Daniel chapter 2, after the Babylonians, they have the Medo-Persian Empire next. So they become power during a 70-year period while Judah is in captivity. So it's during this time that we have the return from captivity. 536, Cyrus, Persian king, gives a decree that they can turn and go back home. Ezra chapter 1, verse 2, thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, all the kingdoms of the earth, the Lord God of heaven has given to me, has commanded me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. So he lets them go back home. Zerubbabel goes back to build the temple. Not a temple like the one Solomon built. Nowhere near. The people wept when they saw it. The comparison there. So Zerubbabel goes back to build the temple. Esther fits in this time frame, about 483 BC. And then Ezra comes back. So Zerubbabel's gone back to build the temple. Ezra comes back to restore the worship. And then Nehemiah comes back about 445, 443. And he comes back to build the walls of the city of Jerusalem. So he had the temple built, attempt to restore the worship, and then the walls of the city rebuilt. The book of Malachi ends at about 432 approximately BC, at the end of the Old Testament recorded history. That brings on what we call the years of silence, a period of time where God does not speak to his people in any recorded history that we have. Amos 8:11 is the verse that says there will be a famine from hearing the word of God. So we use the prophecy from Daniel chapter 2 to look at the kingdoms that will come to play during this silence time. We already had Babylon and the Medo-Persians. We'll have the Greeks and the Romans, as was prophesied in Daniel chapter 2. 331, Persia, who's in power when the return goes back. 331, the Persian Empire falls. And we have Alexander and the Greeks, who become the world dominant power at that time. And then in about 63 BC, Rome has come to power, In 63 BC, they take Palestine. That's what's key to us, is that. Herod's made king of Judah in 37 BC, and about 20 BC, Herod starts building the temple, building onto and remodeling and making the temple larger. So this is some of the things that happened during the years of silence. A quick way to look at it, and these years are approximate, but again, it gives you something to grab onto. About 100 years each. During this 400 years, the Medo-Persian kingdom is still in power for about 100 years. The Greeks, roughly 100 years. The Maccabean Revolt, about 100 years. And then the beginning of the Roman Empire, 100 years. Not exact, but some rough numbers to help you remember the times, the things that go on during the years of silence. Palestine has now changed. Instead of having Israel in the north and Judah in the south, we have still Judea in the south. In the middle now, we have the Samaritans. In the north, we have Galilee, where Jesus will grow up and be most of his time. That brings us to the life of Christ. That silence is broken in Luke chapter 1. When the angel appears to Zacharias, he's going about his duties in the temple. And he speaks to Zechariah, telling him about the birth of John, who would be the forerunner and prepare the way for Christ. We break the life of Christ up into seven periods. First one being the years of preparation, beginning of his ministry, the Galilean ministry, periods of retirement, close of his ministry, last week, and the resurrection and exaltation. Years of preparation lasted about 30 years from the time of Jesus' birth up until he went through John for his baptism at about age 30. Beginning of his ministry was getting things started, about a 6-month time frame. The Galilean ministry, 18 months. And then the periods of retirement, there are 4 periods where he pulls his apostles away from the crowd so he can have time to spend with them, another 6 months. The close of the ministry, about 6 months. Again, all these are approximate. But we got 6, 18, 6, and 6 to make up the 3 years that Jesus was on the earth teaching his people. And then the last week, and that's where we are, starting the foundation class this morning to our third quarter here, is in the last week, looking at all the events that occur leading up to this death of Jesus on the cross. As Jeremy said, all this behind it, looking forward to this time, all of us now, looking back to this time of Jesus' crucifixion and resurrection. Then we have the 40 days after the resurrection, today's ascension, back into heaven, exalted at the right hand of God. And now, the third promise is fulfilled. It was made to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. The nation's been fulfilled. They have the land. And now, the seed promise that he promised Abraham has now been completed. Jesus told his apostles that you shall receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you. Shall be witness to me in Jerusalem, in Judea, in Samaria, the uttermost parts of the earth. Acts chapter 2, the first gospel sermon is preached on the day of Pentecost. And now the church is established and we have a spiritual nation, not like physical nation of Israel, special to God, but the spiritual nation that we're all part of. Acts 8, this is what Jesus said, they're moving out now. The Samaritans hear the gospel in Acts chapter 8. In Acts chapter 10, the first Gentile hears the gospel, Cornelius and his household. And then starting in Acts 13, these missionary journeys start. And Paul and Barnabas primarily, along with Timothy and Silas and Luke, spread the gospel throughout Asia Minor and Greece and Rome and all the known world at that time. Then, the church established over a broad period, broad space, letters are written to the various churches and some to individuals. Paul, Peter, James, Jude, and John write these various epistles to the churches across this vast territory. That's the change we made to our curriculum here. We're now putting the epistles in to be studied by our students. 3/4 of the epistles 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, Romans, Galatians, and James will be in one quarter. Ephesians, Colossians, Philemon, Philippians, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians, and Hebrews in another quarter. And then finally, 1st and 2nd Timothy, Titus, 1st and 2nd Peter, Jude, 1, 2, 3 John, and Revelation in the third quarter. So somewhere adding in to the curriculum is to study the epistles. That kind of covers the narrative in a real big hurry, starting with creation in Genesis chapter 1, bringing and tracking the promises made to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob as they develop with the nation, and then the land promise, captivity, the return, breaking the years of silence, the life of Christ, church being established, gospel spread throughout, and the epistles are written to all the Christians around the known world at that time. Reminds us of Daniel chapter 2, verse 44. In the days of these kings, Roman kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. The kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces to consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. God's kingdom has been established. Christ came to tear down, fulfill the old law, put it out of the way, led it to the cross, and to establish his law, his will, his church, and that kingdom will stand forever. We have an opportunity to be part of that kingdom. He's granted that to us through his grace and his mercy. And so tonight, if you're not a member of Christ's kingdom, and you know what you need to do to be saved tonight, we invite you to come to the front while we stand and sing.